Israel is committing the world's most documented genocide in history. The Palestinian death toll tops 23,000, mostly women and children. Palestinian Authority president tells the U.S. Secretary of State that Gaza is integral to Palestinian statehood aspiration. And Iran's parliament speaker tells his Asian counterparts in an international conference on Palestine that action needs to be taken to stop the Israeli genocide in Gaza. This is News. Thanks for joining us. More than 3 months into the Israeli genocide in Gaza, the regime continues with its carpet bombing campaign across the besieged territory. Nearly 150 Palestinians have been killed in the past day. Israel has bombed different areas of Gaza, including the southern city of Khan Yunis, that hosts thousands of displaced Palestinians. Several were injured at a Yuman school when Israeli drones opened live fire on Palestinians taking shelter there. The city's Nasser Hospital and its vicinity have also come under heavy Israeli fire. To the central Gaza, Israeli warplanes shelled civilian areas near Al-Maghazi and Nusayrat refugee camps. In the north, residential areas in Deir al-Balah and Jabalia were pounded. The overall death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza has now reached 23,360, mostly women and children. A newly emerged video has gone viral on social media, showing Israeli snipers targeting civilians in Gaza. Israeli snipers targeted a group of mostly women and children who were passing through a Gaza street carrying white flags as a token of peace. They gunned down one Palestinian woman carrying a child and waving the white flag. Israel is already facing a genocide case at the International Court of Justice after South Africa filed a lawsuit against the regime. Pretoria's initiative has been welcomed by several countries. It's more than 3 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, which has not only caused the loss of thousands of innocent lives, but has also inflicted severe mental and physical harm upon Palestinians. Israel has also intensified its brutalities in the West Bank. In the latest attack, the regime's forces deliberately opened fire on three Palestinians in the occupied territories. Surveillance camera footage from the West Bank village of Beit Rima showed Israeli snipers opening fire on the three men. That happened despite the fact that the men posed no threat. One of them died, while the other two sustained injuries. Israeli forces shot one of the wounded a second time as he tried to get up and flee. Here's an interview with the survivors of the latest Israeli aggression. Let's take a listen.
My friends and I were standing at the village roundabout when we heard someone say that there was the Israeli army and soldiers walking around. We stood there not knowing what to do and having nothing in our hands. Suddenly there was a sniper soldier who started shooting at my brother, injuring him. I ran toward him to help, but the soldiers started shooting at me, and there was a third person who tried to help, but who was killed at the same time the soldier was sniping.
I was injured in my left leg and fell to the ground. After that, I tried to stand up, but then the Israeli soldiers shot at my other leg. I was subsequently transported to the hospital.
The president of the Palestinian Authority has told the U.S. Secretary of State that Gaza is integral to the Palestinian statehood hopes and must not be cut off as a result of Israel's aggression on the besieged enclave. Mahmoud Abbas called for international talks to end the Israeli occupation and to achieve peace and security. He made the remarks during a meeting with the visiting U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. The meeting was held when demonstrators were holding up signs reading Stop the Genocide and Free Palestine. This is the fourth visit by Blinken to the occupied territories since Israel waged its genocidal war on Gaza 3 months ago. The U.S. is facing growing criticism over its direct involvement and complicity in the Israeli crimes against Palestinians. Netizens have reacted to Biden's speech being disrupted by pro-Palestine protesters. Critics used the hashtag #GenocideJoe to voice their anger at the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza and called for mounting pressure against Biden to force him to stop killing Gazans.
Good. Disrupt every single speech he gives. No peace for Genocide Joe.
I am asking Genocide Joe, 94 days of ruthless air, land, and sea bombing of Gaza with 23,000 killed, including 10,000 children and 7,000 women. Can you still not see any acts of Gaza genocide or maybe dementia is weighing on you.
Biden was shaken. He's starting to understand the reality. His war on Gaza is horrifically unpopular and people are fed up.
If you provide a platform for Genocide Joe, expect a protest. How many places of worship have been destroyed in Palestine?
The only people under the age of 65 at this Biden rally are there to protest Genocide Joe.
Warmonger Genocide Joe should not hold another event without being reminded about the genocide he's funding and refusing to stop.
Genocide Joe has nowhere to hide.
Yemeni armed forces say that they have targeted an American ship supporting the Israeli regime in the Red Sea.
The naval forces of the Yemeni forces and the rocket force, also the drone forces, were able to launch a joint military operation with a big number of ballistic rockets and naval rockets and drones that targeted an American vessel, which was giving support to the Zionist regime. This operation came as a preliminary and initial retaliation against the attack that attacked our naval forces.
Yahya Sari said the operation was a response to an attack conducted by the U.S. against Yemeni naval forces last month. Washington has created a coalition to purportedly safeguard commercial traffic in the Red Sea amid anti-Israel retaliatory operations. General Sari vowed that the Yemeni retaliatory operations against Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea will continue until the regime's genocidal war on Gaza ends and the siege is lifted. Meanwhile, the U.S. military said American and British forces shot down nearly two dozen drones and missiles that were fired from Yemen on Tuesday. Iran's Parliament Speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf says it is high time that the world took more practical steps to stop the Israeli genocide in Gaza.
We need to take some practical action. We should start that and embark on it. At this juncture, what can, in an effective way, bring the occupation regime's efforts under control and bridle those operations that are actually the severing or reducing of the political and economic relations, a ban on oil and other merchandise, basic commodities, and also recognizing the rights of the Palestinians in their self-defense and also making efforts in order to liberate the occupied territories, as well as recognizing the Zionist regime as a terrorist regime, and the Zionist military should be considered as a terrorist organization. And we should also have this international mission in place in order to prosecute the crimes of the Israeli regime at the international tribunals.
Ghalibaf was addressing the first meeting of the Palestine Committee of the Asian Parliamentary Assembly. He called for a complete end to the Israeli aggression and the acceleration of the humanitarian aid delivery to Gaza. Ghalibaf emphasized the importance of opening a humanitarian corridor in order for patients to receive treatment outside of the war-torn territory. He said effective measures must be adopted for an immediate stop to the forced displacement of Palestinians from their homeland. Iran's parliament speaker also urged Israel's allies to pressure the regime to put an end to the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. He called it the only way to prevent the regional spillover of the war. Ghalibaf stressed any political solution regarding the future of Palestine must be achieved by Palestinians themselves, and no regional or extra-regional player has the right to decide for them. Over 3 months into the Israeli bloodbath in Gaza, an Iranian football journalist turns the spotlight on international sports organizations, blaming them for turning a blind eye to Israeli crimes by allowing the regime's teams to participate in sporting events. Nima Tavalei Rutsari has run a petition calling for banning Israel from taking part in international sports events as per precedent set with banning Russia due to its aggression on Ukraine. Mr. Tavalai is now joining us to tell us more. Well, welcome to the program. We're looking at an unprecedented move from your part, which would set a precedent if this was to happen, pushing for this ban on the Israeli regime. Tell us what, first of all, I guess, motivated you to do this, which is pretty evident. but also the plans you have to see if this can actually come to fruition and for it to actually occur.
Well, it's good to be with you. I just wanted to just clarify a few things. This petition is run by DiEM25, which is an organization under working closely with and by with Yanis Varoufakis. And the petition itself was written, the letter itself was written by an excellent legal scholar, Katarina Pietkovic, who I think you should probably have on this show to discuss the more legal aspects of this. She's a force of nature, and she's got two PhDs in sports law, so she can explain the legal ramifications of this. But we got into contact because of the fact that this hypocrisy cannot be allowed to stand. Within hours of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, all of these sporting organizations, the IOC, UEFA, FIFA, and etc., issued statements of condemnation. 4 days later, they began, they suspended all Russian and Belarus teams, including youth and Paralympic level from competition, from competing, just like that. Now, those of us who don't believe in politicizing sports or any non-political context told them at the time, you're opening Pandora's box here, because if you do this without any debate, without any thought and afterthought, you're opening the door to politicizing all of sports, even in matters that perhaps your political side of the aisle is uncomfortable with. And this is where we are now. The IOC, UEFA, FIFA, all of these sporting institutions, they are left with no choice but to suspend Israel, as they did with Russia and Belarus, for the simple reason that, like I said, they've painted themselves into a corner. Because if they don't ban Israel, they're essentially saying that all member countries of the Olympic movement and the sporting family are not equal, and that some can act with complete impunity. Which leads me to a very important point about and the anti-Semitism, which they, the Zionists, claim that those of us who are anti-Zionists are. But let me tell you, if the IOC, UEFA, FIFA, and all of these sporting institutions do not act to suspend Israel, they are feeding into disgusting anti-Semitic tropes about Jews controlling the world, which all civilized human beings know is nothing more than just racist bile and lies. Jews do not control the world. The global hegemonic Western imperialist oligarchy, who are not all Jewish but are all Zionist imperialists, they currently control the world's affairs, at least for the time being. And they are all professional gaslighters of the highest order. They bang on about being for freedom of speech while suppressing dissenting voices. They erroneously want to shut down all debate on the apartheid state of Israel by equating Zionism, a fascist political ideology, with Judaism, a monotheistic religion, in order to muddy the waters and shut down debate on their atrocities, the latest of which we are seeing in Gaza right now. In fact, I would go further and say that the Zionists are the real anti-Semites, who, for the reasons I've outlined, are callously playing Russian roulette with the lives of Jewish people everywhere. But thankfully, no one believes this nonsense anymore. The spell has been broken, and more people see the terrorist Zionist imperialist organization NATO, spearheaded by the US government at the behest of that oligarchy and their Frankenstein monster Israel, for what they all are: thieving murderers who do nothing more than to divide and conquer. But unfortunately for them, they are dying, and it will soon be over for them. So that's why we need as many people as possible to sign this petition. People ask, what can I do? Is there anything I can do? You can. You can go and sign this petition. All you need is the internet.
And what is that website?
It's bit.li/Israel ban. And it's case sensitive, so all the letters have to be small.
Okay. You know, when we take a look at what you're saying, which is great, in essence, we are seeing the genocide occur on our TV screens. We are seeing that firsthand, and that's proof of it. Now, the thing is, how does this get enforced? I could maybe draw a comparison where you have the ICC or the ICJ, where they come out with rulings, one for the, I guess, entity as a whole, then the other, the ICC being the ICJ for that, and then the ICC being for individuals. But the enforcement part, since Israel doesn't listen to anybody, doesn't abide by any international law, maybe this can somehow then stop them from sporting participation. Where's the activation mechanism going to come to enforce this?
Well, if the IOC wants to remain a credible organization, if they want to remain as impartial, which they claim that they are, remember, all of these sporting organizations claim that they are above politics. They don't interfere in politics. They stay out of it. But if they don't act now, they are essentially saying that, no, all lives don't matter. One nation, one country can act with impunity, backed up by the United States. And then the whole thing becomes a charade. And I fear for the future of the Olympic movement and sporting movement unless they actually impose something upon Israel for the madness, the absolute lunacy that we have seen on all of Palestinian society in Gaza. But, of course, with sports, which is the matter which I cover, is particularly pertinent given that the Palestinian national team is now going to play a tournament in the Asian Cup, with many of its players having either been killed or maimed, having lost limbs, on top of the pressure, the mental pressure of having to think about what is happening with their relatives and family members. This hypocrisy just cannot continue to stand. And if it does, I fear then that's the end of the beginning of the end of international sporting organizations as we know it.
Okay, I wish we had more time to talk, but thank you very much for that. That's Nima Tavale Rutsari. We do appreciate it. And you can go on to his Twitter account where you have the petition that's there at sign D-I caps E-M /25 and also take a look at some of the posts that he has. Thank you so much. More countries hail South Africa for filing a lawsuit against Israel at the International Court of Justice over the regime's genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip. Belgium is the first European nation that has backed South Africa's petition against Israel at the top UN court. Belgium's Deputy Prime Minister Petra de Sutter said that her country cannot remain silent in the face of genocide in Gaza. In a message posted on X, he called on the Belgian government to take its own action at the ICJ. Previously, the Maldives, Namibia, Pakistan, Turkey, Bolivia, Jordan, and Malaysia also voiced their support for the case. Meanwhile, over 900 popular movements, unions, political parties, and other civil organizations signed an open letter calling on world states to support the genocide case. South Africa filed a lawsuit against Israel at the end of December. The ICJ will hold its first hearing to consider provisional measures on Thursday. With that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks so much for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime's onslaught in Gaza did not begin since October 7th. It has been ongoing for decades. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, now in its third month, the leveling of Gaza, which has caused unprecedented destruction to people, infrastructure, and habitats, seems unstoppable. Neither genuine U.S. pressure to limit civilian casualties, nor the rhetoric of Arab states, which could not even agree on joint actions such as an oil embargo or the temporary severance of formal diplomatic relations, have managed to stop or even moderate the Zionist regime's savage assault on Gaza. UN resolutions has also proven ineffective. Unbelievable as it sounds, it seems that the fate of millions of Palestinians will continue to be decided by just two men, the Zionist regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and U.S. President Joe Biden. The fabricated regime of Israel has declared that its campaign will last for many more months, possibly with no additional truce periods. Far from de-escalating the offensive or ensuring a significantly lower civilian death toll, as the United States has pushed for, not so much out of concern for Palestinian lives as out of fears of a broader regional war and damage to international support for Washington and Tel Aviv, the Zionist regime has instead escalated its attacks since the brief November truce. It is beyond doubt that the Zionist regime has already committed a series of war crimes. This is not surprising for a regime that has for decades developed and cultivated that habit, and even less so when one remembers that Israel was founded on ethnic cleansing, war crimes, discrimination against non-Jews, and contempt for international law have been major parts of the Zionist regime's DNA since its creation in 1948 and even before. But there is now debate over whether the Zionist regime's massacres have reached the level of genocide in the legal sense of the term. According to Article 2 of the Genocide Convention, genocide means any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. Killing members of the group, causing them serious bodily or mental harm, deliberately inflicting conditions of life aiming to bring about the group's destruction, imposing measures intended to prevent death, or forcibly transferring children to another group. The Zionist regime's actions in Gaza and their horrific consequences on the entire civilian population, alongside the repeated declarations of Israeli regime officials that strongly suggest deliberate intent to wipe out, or at least harm, as many Palestinians as possible, leave little doubt that the bar has been reached and long since surpassed. Many officials, journalists, and members of civil society have publicly called this a genocide. Despite some reservations, a consensus seems to be emerging among academics, legal scholars, and even former International Criminal Court prosecutors who can certainly recognize a genocide when it is unfolding before their eyes. History has taught us there are many ways to exterminate a group of people or depleted a population. But the Zionist regime's campaign of genocide, ongoing since 1948, is defined by several characteristics. Its permanent nature, the variation between slow-motion genocide and waves of brutal slaughter, and the rich array of techniques of mass death. In the current moment, Israel is systematically combining all those methods of death with horrific results. One can identify at least 8 genocidal techniques that have converged in the regime's reaction to the October 7th events. It appears that the Zionist regime seized this opportunity to take its slow-motion genocide to a whole new level of brutality. Number 1. Kill them. Bomb Palestinians indiscriminately. Here, media attention, pressure from allies such as the U.S., and international protest can have a certain effectiveness in restraining Israel. Despite the Zionist regime's assertions that it is taking measures to protect civilians, the realities on the ground show otherwise, with non-combatants forming the bulk of the casualties. Schools, hospitals, and apartment buildings have been directly targeted. Number two, starve them. This is being done through blockades of food and water supplies. Again, this is nothing new. It has long been part of a concerted and an organized Israeli policy to deprive Palestinians of even the most fundamental of all life-sustaining resources and water. Number three, strip them of medical care. The Zionist regime is maximizing the casualty count by destroying medical infrastructure, including hospitals, thus ensuring that many who might have been saved will instead die from untreated injuries. Number four, spread disease among them. The collapse of medical infrastructure, along with catastrophic living conditions, has guaranteed the spread of disease, risking another significant wave of death. Number five, exhaust them through forced evictions. Taking a page from the American genocide, the Zionist regime is now using forced relocation, first from Gaza's north to the south. Then within the south, to make exhausted and often injured people move from one safe area to the next. A grid map published by Israel has divided southern Gaza into hundreds of tiny parcels, between which people are being forced to move at short notice to avoid bombs. Number six, destroy their environment. What is happening in Gaza is a veritable ecocide. The amount of environmental destruction through everything from durable pollution to military ammunition is enormous and could affect future generations. Number seven, atomize their society. The systematic destruction of governmental and administrative structures under the pretext of fighting resistance movements has upended Palestinian society. By displacing the majority of Gaza's 2.3 million people, the Zionist regime is severing their social links. It is unclear how they will be able to recreate a society in the future, especially as the Zionist regime has tried to tie all civilians to resistance groups and intends to maintain control over the territory and its resources for the foreseeable future. And number eight, break their spirit. For decades, the Zionist regime has used psychological warfare to foster a sense of despair and helplessness among the population. This has been terribly effective among the most vulnerable, Gaza's children, many of whom suffered from severe desperation and suicidal thoughts even before the current offensive. Given that the fabricated regime of Israel also makes it nearly impossible for them to be treated, most will suffer long-term trauma. The eight methods are all forms of collective punishment, with consequences bound to last for at least a generation, even if the war were to end today.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran, and we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum wal'an alahum ajma'in. Brothers and sisters, previously we have discussed the different constituents of supplication. We mentioned that supplication is made up of three constituents. The first one is the spiritual attraction between the creator and the servant. The second one is the supplicant. And the third one is the Almighty Allah, which is invoked. Now, regarding the second constituent, or the supplicant, we mentioned that the very first factor in the true supplicant is that he must be submissive. A supplicant has to observe these conditions in order to see his supplication be responded to. And the very first condition is submission. The first condition for a supplicant is to recognize his own servitude towards the creator of the universe. Now, the second one, the second condition for a genuine supplication, as we mentioned, is to recognize Allah with this attribute of being capable of satisfying whatever He wants to present to Him. He must realize that He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, is the one who will achieve anything, who will get him anything he wants, and there is no impediment and hurdle on the way of His might and His power. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, when asking God to fulfill his needs, says, "Tamaddahta bil ghina'i an khalqik." You have been praised with being not in need of your creatures. Wa anta ahlul ghina'i anhum. And you deserve this attribute. Wa nasabtahum ila al faqri wa hum ahlul al faqri ilayk. Faman hawala سَدَّ خِلَّتِهِ مِنْ عِنْدِكَ وَرَامَ صَرْفَ الْفَقْرِ عَنْ نَفْسِهِ بِكَ فَقَدْ طَلَبَ حَاجَتَهُ فِي مَظَانِّهَا وَأَتَى طِلْبَتَهُ مِنْ وَجْهِهَا. You have considered your creatures as needy, and they are so in need to you. Whoever tries to cure his defect by resorting to you and deprive poverty away from himself and drive poverty away from himself by your richness, surely he has chosen the right way. He is the one who has got his want from its right source. Imam alayhi salam is teaching us, he is trying to make us understand the fact that the true supplicant is the one who realizes the absolute richness and the state of absolute powerfulness of the Almighty Allah. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam adds, stating that Allah hates for His people to ask other than Him, Subhana Rabbi, glory be to Allah. كَيْفَ يَسْأَلُ مُحْتَاجٌ مُحْتَاجَ وَأَنَّا يَرْغَبُ مُعْدِمٌ إِلَى مُعْدِمٌ. How is it possible for a poor one to ask another poor one? How is it possible for a needy one to resort to another needy one? This means they have not realized who the Almighty Allah is. Give Him the best that I have ever given to the supplicants.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo kashti ab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju tishnagi avar bedast. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad ab az. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah, that we hear, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God speaks with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Regarding this second condition of the real supplicant, of a genuine supplicant, I mean, this condition of understanding that Almighty Allah is in absolute state of power, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Subhan alladhi yatawakkalu kullu mu'minin alayh." Glory be to Allah, upon whom every faithful relies. "Wayultarru kullu jahidin ilayh," and to whom every unbeliever resorts. "Wala yastaghni ahadun illa bifadli ma ladayh," and whom no one becomes needless except with his favors. In Sahifatu Sajjadiyya, we read that Imam alayhi salam says, "Subhana man qaddara biqudratihi kulla qudrah." Glory be to him who has determined with his power every power. And elsewhere, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says, "Asbahna fi qablatik." My Lord, we are under your control. As you can see, dear listeners, our traditions, in fact, the supplications of the infallibles are replete with this concept. As you can see, each and every one of these transmitted supplications specifically, they are replete with the concept of presenting the state of neediness to the kind of Lord which is mentioned and named as the absolute power. The one who can grant anything at any given possibility, and no hurdle is meant to stop him. So Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says, "Asbahna fi qablatik," my Lord, we are under your control. "Yahwina mulkuka wa sultanuk," we are possessed by your kingdom, by your rule, and we are submitted to your will. We act according to your orders. We move according to your management. وَنَتَصَرَّفُ عَنْ أَمْرِكَ وَنَتَقَلَّبُ فِي تَدْبِيرِكَ. We have no choice except what you have determined. We have no goodness except what you have given. وَلَيْسَ لَنَا مِنَ الْأَمْرِ إِلَّا مَا قَضَيْتَ وَلَا مِنَ الْخَيْرِ إِلَّا مَا أَعْطَيْتَ. This is the kind of powerful God. So, the supplicant, if he wants his supplication to be responded to, he must realize his state of iltirar. He must always be in this state, and he must realize the kind of Almighty Allah he must be connected to. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ooh. Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. Allah, yeah, Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Yeah, Allah, yeah, Allah, don't let me go astray, 'cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsetodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsetodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
South Africa has instituted proceedings against the Israeli regime at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, over Israel's genocidal onslaught in the Gaza Strip. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. The British government has been charged with double standards after submitting detailed legal arguments to the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, to support claims that Myanmar has committed genocide, but refraining from doing the same in the case of Israel. In late December, South Africa started proceedings against the Israeli regime at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, over the regime's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip, which has so far massacred tens of thousands of Palestinians. The lawsuit says Israel's actions are genocidal in character because they're intended to bring about the destruction of a substantial part of the Palestinian national, racial and ethnic group. While Britain made a 21-page declaration of intervention in the case of Myanmar's genocide against the Rohingya ethnic group, jointly with five other countries, it is not supporting South Africa as it prepares to convince the ICJ that Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people. According to a recent report by The Guardian, Tayyab Ali, the head of the international law at Bindman's law firm, says the significance of the UK submission on Myanmar lay in showing the importance the UK attaches to adherence to the United Nations Genocide Convention, and in showing the United Kingdom took a wide and not a narrow definition of acts of genocide and the intent to commit genocide. He added, it would be wholly disingenuous if Britain, 6 weeks after advancing such a significant and broad definition of genocide in the case of Myanmar, now adopts a narrow definition in the case of Israel. The report said, while the United Kingdom's submission on Myanmar highlights the importance of children in assessing a genocide when it comes to Israel, London ignores that nearly 10,000 Palestinian children and babies have been massacred in the Gaza Strip, accounting for about 40% of the fatalities. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. South Africa has instituted proceedings against the Israeli regime at the International Court of Justice over the regime's genocidal onslaught in the Gaza Strip, which has so far massacred tens of thousands of Palestinians. The lawsuit says the acts in question include massacring Palestinians in Gaza, causing them serious bodily harm and mental harm, and inflicting on them conditions of life calculated to bring about their physical destruction. The application said that Israel has engaged in, is engaging in, and risks further engaging in genocidal acts against the Palestinian people in Gaza. Various governments and human rights organizations have denounced the Israeli genocide in Gaza and called for international investigation into it. South Africa has been one of the outspoken critics of the Israeli regime's ongoing war in the Gaza Strip, and has led some initiatives to hold Israel accountable for its actions in Gaza. The country's lawmakers recently voted in favor of closing down the Israeli embassy in Pretoria and suspending all diplomatic relations until Israel's onslaught on Gaza has ended. In November, the country referred Israel to the International Criminal Court, the ICC, which is already investigating the occupied Palestinian territories. South Africa has backed the Palestinian cause for statehood in Israeli-occupied territories for decades, likening the plight of Palestinians to those of black majority in South Africa during the repressive apartheid regime. The International Court of Justice, the ICJ, is one of six principal organs of the United Nations and helps settle disputes between states according to international law. The Business Standard has also covered the same story and tells us more. Judges at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ at The Hague, Netherlands, will hear a case on Israel's genocidal acts in the besieged Gaza Strip in the coming days, as a horrible nightmare of bloodshed in the Palestinian territory is unfolding due to the occupying regime's incessant bombings. South Africa, in an 84-page lawsuit filed against the Israeli regime at the ICJ on 29th of December, asked the top court to urgently declare that the Tel Aviv regime has breached its responsibilities under international law since 7th of October, when it launched an ongoing war on the densely populated coastal sliver. Pretoria detailed evidence of brutality being perpetrated in the Gaza Strip, making South Africa the first country to file a lawsuit against Israel at the United Nations' top court. The court said in a recent statement, the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, will hold public hearings at the Peace Palace in The Hague in proceedings instituted by South Africa against Israel on 11th and 12th of January. Pretoria, amongst other urgent measures, is asking the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, to order that Israel immediately suspend its military operations in and around Gaza. Israel has already rejected South Africa's legal move with disgust, While the United States of America, Tel Aviv's staunch ally and supporter, denounced the submission as meritless, counterproductive, and completely without any basis in fact. More than 3 months into the war, Tel Aviv has failed to achieve its declared objective of eliminating the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas and expulsion of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip. Website Axios has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Israeli Foreign Ministry has ordered its embassies across the globe to make sure that their host countries reject South Africa's genocide case against it at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ. Pretoria addressed the ICJ recently, saying Israel's ongoing attacks on Gaza are genocidal in character because they are intended to bring about the destruction of a substantial part of the Palestinian population. South Africa wants the International Court of Justice at The Hague to issue an injunction ordering the Israeli regime to suspend its military campaign in the enclave. The cable, which was sent out by the Zionist regime's foreign ministry recently, stressed that Israel's strategic goals are for the ICJ to reject South Africa's request for an injunction, refrain from determining that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza, and acknowledge that the Israeli army actions in the enclave comply with international law. The document, copies of which were seen by the Axios news outlet, read, "A ruling by the court could have significant potential implications that are not only in the legal world but have practical bilateral, multilateral, economic, security ramifications." According to the Israeli Foreign Ministry, Israeli diplomats must pressure their counterparts and high-level politicians in host countries to issue immediate and unequivocal public statement along the following lines: to publicly and clearly state that your country rejects the outrageous, absurd, and baseless allegations made against Israel. The cable added, "It's also important for foreign nations to publicly acknowledge that Israel is working to increase the humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip, as well as to minimize damage to civilians, while acting in self-defense after the 7th of October attack by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas." It added, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will also send letters to dozens of world leaders relaying a similar message. Countries like Turkey, Jordan, and Malaysia have supported South Africa's case at the ICJ. However, it was rejected by Israel's prime backer, the United States. The U.S. State Department spokesman, Matthew Miller, claimed recently that we're not seeing any acts that constitute genocide in the Gaza Strip. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.